This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And now your host, Chris Ranji.
It is not Chris Ranji. It's Ed Farmer alongside Darren Jackson. Glenn is Chris Ranji is on other duties right now.
From the Chicago Wolves Update Studio, I'm Chris, looking to attend a live hockey game.
Hi, I'm Chris, looking to attend a hockey game.
Well, hold on 1 minute, Chris. Let me have a large Sprite Heavy Ice. Come on.
Heck a man.
You know what? You know
what? Man.
That's it. You broke Ranji now. Way to go.
Well, he's been broke all day.
He's a hard reboot. Oh,
I need to be better at my job.
I wouldn't, you know what? It's far too late for that.
And now your host, Chris Ranji.
It's really horrible. Hello, friends. How you doing on a Friday night? It is a little after 7 o'clock, and I hope you're having a great night. And it just occurs to me, I'm listening to all of that stuff, and Ed Farmer at the very beginning, when he says Chris Ranji is on other duties, or whatever exactly he said, do you know what he was saying in the moment was he was covering for me because I was late to work? Totally true. I don't know if I've told this story before. I think I have. I was doing a Sox post game show, and it was one of those stupid, you know, those dumb idiots in Cleveland or wherever where they will have an 11 o'clock Central Time game start. So we had a pregame show at 10:30 a.m. I'm already not a morning person. It's already difficult for me to wake up in the morning, which makes my current job really tough. And on that day, it was a 10:30 pregame show, and I woke up at around 7:05, 7:10, something like that. And I looked at the phone, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to catch a little bit more sleep. I'm good. You know, they're on the road. I was just going into the studio. Didn't really need to be there 3-4 hours ahead of time. I'm going to catch a few more Z's. I put the phone down. I thought I set the alarm. The next time I woke up was 10:26. And I was on the air in 4 minutes. So I was late to work. And that's Ed Farmer, who is covering for me. Chris Ranji, he's on other duties. I was not. I was sleeping in. And I missed work. I miss Ed Farmer. The phone number is 312-644-6767. I'm with you tonight until 9 o'clock. We got a lot to get to tonight in the couple of hours that you and I get to spend together. We are going to talk to Chuck Swirsky, Bulls play-by-play right here on The Score. We will talk about the trade of Alex Caruso and the acquisition of Josh Giddey. We'll get Swirsky's thoughts on that. Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio is going to join the show as well. And we're going to talk to John Greenberg from The Athletic. He will be with us to talk a number of sports issues in Chicago. So, what has been the biggest news over the last 24 hours or so? Alex Caruso is off to Oklahoma City. Josh Giddey coming back, the 21-year-old, who has had some not really legal troubles because he was never technically in trouble, but there was an accusation about him of an inappropriate relationship, and it was from an anonymous source on social media. It was investigated by police and investigated by the NBA. Both entities dropped that investigation because they could not find anything. That has still sort of been hanging over him for a while. But in terms of being a player, there is a lot of promise there in what he can end up doing for the Bulls and how he could end up fitting in and what it then means for some of the remaining players like Zach LaVine, like Coby White, who is probably going to move down to the two spot, as Giddey will likely handle the ball most of the time. So there are some implications for the rest of the team, certainly. But really what it's about now is, what do the Bulls do beyond that? What is the rest of the offseason plan? There have been, and I've seen a lot of the reaction about the deal, and there are a lot of Bulls fans that hate it. And I get it, but here's why I think they hate it. They like Alex Caruso so much, and there is every reason to love him because he's all out. He's an instinctive player. He's very smart. He makes things happen. He's that energetic guy that is just a terrific... He's got a terrific role, and he plays that role very well. And you never want to give up somebody like that, but I think the reason Bulls fans hate it the most, if they hate it, is because they had that guy and they couldn't really do a whole lot with him when he was here. It feels like a waste. Every time he had those nights, and pretty much it was every night, he was always doing something that made you go, man, I love this guy. It just, it feels like all of that over the last few years now has been wasted. Like they had an opportunity to do something with him, but it really, I think it's more of a bigger picture Bulls organization, not exactly sure where they're going or if they're heading in the right direction. I think it's that kind of feeling. And it's here's this guy. He was so much fun to watch. And man, wouldn't it have been something if they could have had another a really good team around him? And then you have that guy who does the things that he does. And then you can celebrate it, right? I think that's really what this is about. It just feels like a wasted moment. And it's not like I'm talking about the team leader or the best player on the team and wasting that. Like wasting Derrick Rose or something. You know, I'm not talking about that. It's just when you have a player like that that you love, you wish that the team could do something to help the guy out. And I think that's really all it is. And it's absolutely justified, but it kind of feels like maybe the Bulls might be moving in that right direction. And this is the start of it. But it really comes down to, what does the rest of the offseason look like? Which we'll have to wait and see. Cubs lose today at home 11-1 to the New York Mets. And really the story from today is Shota Imanaga, who was their best pitcher in the first part of the season this year, and he really has been anything but over his last five starts. Now, that does include a couple of starts against the Cardinals and against the Reds, in which he was really, really good, but in three of the five, he has given up at least five runs, and one of those a lot of unearned runs, so not entirely his fault, but he was unable to pitch around mistakes. But he has given up five runs at least in three of those five, seven runs at least in two of them, and then today he's charged with 10. So there is a lot of concern about what was one of the better stories about the Cubs early in the season, and now as we get closer to the middle of the year, Shota Imanaga does not look nearly as good, and the results are not there like they were early on. So is there reason to be concerned about him? I mean, clearly the last few starts will tell you yes, but is this a blip or is this a trend that we might see continue through the rest of the year? I want to talk to Mike Farron about that from MLB.com and get his thoughts. White Sox are in Detroit right now. They are losing 2-1. And here I noticed something. And by the way, Tommy Pham hit a home run in this game. And I noticed something just watching it, and this is it's just a small observation, but Jack Flaherty is pitching for the Tigers tonight, or he was. He's out of the game now. But he's, and it's not something I've noticed from him before, and if he's been doing this, I had never seen it before, but he's doing that Ryan Dempster thing with his glove. You remember how Dempster used to kind of shake and twist his glove as he was delivering?
Yeah, that
and he
wabble.
Said the reason he did it was so that he could, he was trying hard not to tip pitches. He was trying to hide his delivery, and he felt like that was doing that for him, and it was successful. Flaherty does a little of that. I wonder if that's what that is. I have not seen or heard anything written about that, but I wonder if he watched some old Dempster tape and said, you know what, I'm going to give this a try, because it looks like it's working for him. The Rick Wood Field game last night, which took place in Birmingham, Alabama, was truly one of those special nights in baseball, and I don't know if you had an opportunity to watch it. If you didn't, I hope you recorded it, and I really think you should go back and watch it. And it was a game between the Giants and the Cardinals, and I'll tell you right now, the game itself was absolutely secondary. The results and what happened on the field just really did not matter much last night. It was all about the ceremony. It was all about the recognition of the Negro Leagues. It was all about the interviews with guys like Bill Greason, Reggie Jackson, who was there. Just all of these baseball stars who were in attendance and celebrating the Negro Leagues and giving them their due recognition and hearing some of the stories of how they had to live when they were playing baseball and what it was like for them in the 50s and 60s and 70s and how difficult it was to play the game and try to do so at a high level while dealing with crap. In fact, if we have this, Sean, I want to hear a little bit from Reggie Jackson, who was interviewed prior to the game during the pregame show on Fox last night.
How emotional is it for you to come back to a play that you played with one of the greatest teams around?
Alex, when people ask me a question like that, it's like, coming back here is not easy. The racism that I played here, when I played here, the difficulty of going through different places where we traveled. Fortunately, I had a manager and I had players on the team that helped me get through it. But I wouldn't wish it on anybody. People said to me today, I spoke and they said, you think you're a better person? You think you won when you played here and conquered? I said, you know, I would never want to do it again. I walked into restaurants and they would point at me and said, the can't eat here. I would go to a hotel and they say, the can't stay here. We went to Charlie Finley's country club for a welcome home dinner and they pointed me out with the N-word. He can't come in here. Finley marched the whole team out. Finally, they let me in there. He said, we're going to go to the diner and eat hamburgers. We'll go where we're wanted. Fortunately, I had a manager, Johnny McNamara, that if I couldn't eat in the place, nobody would eat. We'd get food to travel. If I couldn't stay in a hotel, they'd drive to the next hotel and find a place where I could stay. Had it not been for Raleigh Fingers, Johnny McNamara, Dave Duncan, Joe and Sharon Rudy, I slept on their couch 3-4 nights a week for about a month and a half. Finally, they were threatened that they would burn our apartment complex down unless I got out. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. The year I came here, Bull Connor was the sheriff the year before. And they took minor league baseball out of here because in 1963, the Klan murdered 4 black girls, children, in 11, 12, 14 years old at a church here and never got indicted. It was, they were from the Klan. Life magazine did a story on them like they were being honored. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. At the same time, had it not been for my white friends, had it not been for a white manager and Rudy, Fingers, and Duncan, and Lee Myers, I would have never made it. I was too physically violent. I was ready to physically fight some. I'd have got killed here because I'd have beat someone's ass, and they'd have, you'd have saw me in an oak tree somewhere.
Reggie, I can't even imagine. It's awful you had to go through that, but, you know, appreciate you sharing the rawness and the honesty of it with our audience. I mean, really, it's...
We love you, Reg.
Yeah.
That's Reggie Jackson on Fox last night prior to the Rick Wood Field game. And it really makes you... I mean, if you just listen to him and take in what he's saying, the guy didn't play that long ago. I mean, we think of the civil rights movement and all of that stuff as it feels ancient. It feels like it happened 200 years ago. But he played his last game in 1987. It's not that long ago that Reggie Jackson was playing baseball. Likewise, Willie Mays, who passed away this week, there was a news story. It was a clipping from a newspaper in 1957. And the story was about how he finally was able to get a house in San Francisco. This is when the Giants moved to California. And the story is, and I'll just read a little bit of it to you, because I think it's truly incredible for a couple of different reasons. One of them is non-consequential. But it says here, Willie Mays, a star center fielder of the newly transferred San Francisco Giants, and his glamorous wife, Marguerite, were comfortably ensconced in their new, and this is one of the amazing factoids here, $37,500 home. So a house that cost less than $38,000. Again, this is the late 50s. And so in that $37,500 home on exclusive Mariloma Drive this week, despite the objections of many whites who did not want the family to move in, Mays, however, isn't worried. He said, "I'm sure the neighbors won't make any trouble. They'll calm down now that it's over." And when you hear stories like Reggie's and you hear what Mays went through and how he handled that, and I'm not sure how any of these guys were able to keep their composure, but to be able to do that, to play at the level they did, to be as good as they were, and then dealing with all of that absolute garbage when they left the ballpark, the taunting by people, the name calling, the worst possible words you could hear, the death threats, the "I don't want you to live in my neighborhood because of how you look." How do you play a game at this level and try to prove yourself when you're dealing with that when you leave the field? I don't know how those guys did it. Truly don't. It's impressive. It's sad. But the reality is that people now don't like to hear it. At least some people don't like to hear it. And I hope that anybody who has an open mind, or maybe has been cynical, skeptical, or unwilling to hear what players go through or went through, I hope people watched last night with an open mind. And I hope they listened. I really do. And I think it's okay, and it's good for us to hear those things, hear those stories, hear what these players went through and how they dealt with it. If for any other reason that we can be aware of it and do everything we can to make sure it doesn't happen again. It's not about guilt. It's not about taking it on ourselves or thinking that we are bad people. It's not that. It's just be aware of it. Know that it happened. Let's not let it happen again. I think that's what it's about. And by the way, just from a presentation standpoint, Fox did an incredible job with that game last night. It just, everything about it, the production, the interviews, all of the memories and tributes. And when they played that half inning in black and white with the audio that was the same that it would have sounded in the late 50s. In it,
yeah,
or the mid-50s.
Lost your mind. We're TV's not broken. TV's not broken. The antennas, the rabbit ears. 6-4-3 double play. So that was 70 years ago. What's it going to be like 70 years from now? We're going to be like able to be down on the field. Virtual reality. I don't know, but this, we want to go. This is a 1954 replay. I know that. Ring them up.
Now, depending on how you're listening to the show right now, if you're listening on AM, it might be difficult to...
It might have just sounded radio.
Yeah, it might have just sounded like regular AM. But if you're listening on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, you'll hear what we're talking about. And it was just the way they did it. They didn't use anything differently for that half inning than they used in the mid-50s during those television broadcasts. Same angles, same quality of picture, same quality of sound, same split screen when there was a runner on first base. Just an awesome job. Great job done by Fox last night. And after having watched the Field of Dreams games over the last couple of years, which were really fun, this was a nice change of pace off of the Field of Dreams game. To do what they did at Rickwood Field, awesome. Very, very good broadcast last night. We are going to talk to Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio. In fact, we will talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about the broadcast. We'll talk to him about Rickwood Field. We'll ask about the Cubs and the White Sox as well. I'm Chris Ranji, hanging out with you. Feel free to call me, baby. 312. Hey, I'm mixing up phone numbers. 312-644-6767. Chris Ranji on the score.
With Salute to Sandberg. That's you.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Mark, appreciate that. And, you and I go back a little bit, and I gave you a little tidbit early on where my nickname was Sandy. I know that you had a blast with that.
I sure did.
Now the last 42 years, Ryan, all of that will work. But it's nice to be with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I don't know why I had get a kick out of the Sandy thing, just because you are Rhino. Before you became this prolific player and Hall of Famer, you were just Sandy from the block, basically.
Through the minor leagues, it was Sandy, just my last name with a Y at the end of it, so Sandy. And then Harry Carey in 82 dubbed me Rhino, and that stuck ever since my rookie season.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Mark Grody and Ryan Sandberg on the Salute to Sandberg, which was just heard here on 670 The Score. Prior to us getting started at 7 o'clock, you can go back to the Odyssey app and take a listen if you missed any of it. You might as well wait until 9 o'clock when we're done here tonight. It is time to go to the guest line tonight. And it is brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, as we bring in MLB Network Radio, XM Radio, ESPN, wherever. He's guys everywhere. It's Mike Farron. He is with us on The Score. Good evening, Mike. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Friday.
Ranji, it's always a pleasure to be with you, but can we talk about Mark Grody for a second? Mark Grody has covered sports for, what, almost 30 years? And the fact that he hasn't figured out that baseball player nicknames tend to not be very creative is like one of the most stunning developments. I mean, just like Grody clearly lives in the moment, right? Like everybody's nickname is just part of their last name and a Y. Except for yours.
Yeah, what is it? There's a comedian, I can't remember who made this joke, but he was talking about really old dogs who live in two second increments, the one they're living in and the one they just left. That's Grody. Grody is right there, just in the middle.
He doesn't know what's going on. But there's only one thing less creative than a baseball nickname. Do you know what it is?
What's that?
It's a hockey nickname, because they only do two things. They only do what Sandy was. They either shorten the name and add a Y, or they add an ER to the end of it. That's it. That's all hockey players
good,
do.
Roncher.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, yeah.
That is it.
Back at the blue line. Yeah.
That is. I don't know what you'd be, though. I think you'd be yours would be difficult.
I'm really easy to refer to by my last name. That's
yeah,
it.
Farron is great. Well, it's good to talk Farron. To you, buddy.
Nobody calls me Farron. Nobody calls me by my first name. My wife doesn't even call me by my first name. She just calls me Farron.
I might call you Michael. Hey, that Rickwood game last night, and I was looking forward to it the entire time, and I really didn't care much about the game itself. I mean, it's got NL Central implications, but I was more looking forward to the production, what would happen before the game, who they would talk to in the middle of it, what they would memorialize, what they would show us about the ballpark. I thought they did a fantastic job all the way through. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, I think, like, the little things were especially great, like the score bug mimicking the scoreboard, right? Like, I thought that was really cool. I thought that was an incredibly cool touch. I think, you know, focusing on the ballpark and its importance and the changes to it, I thought was really neat, and the work that went into fixing it up. I do think that there were some missed opportunities there. I mean, specifically, and, you know, really you only have Reggie Jackson on for a conversation. And listen, like having done for that play for TV games, you don't necessarily know what's going on in the pregame show. It would have been nice to be able to follow up the comments he made for pregame about how it was very difficult for him to come back to Birmingham because of the racism that he faced in the mid-60s there, you know, 20 years after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. And I also think that it would have been nice to have a little bit more historical perspective. I mean, I'm really glad that a large segment of America got introduced to Bob Kendrick last night, who's the president of the Negro Leagues Museum and Hall of Fame in Kansas City. Bob and I have been friends for close to 20 years. He's one of my favorite people. He's one of the greatest storytellers that you'll ever meet. And I would have liked to have seen that, maybe, you know, Larry Lester, who was there, some more about the Negro Leagues history and Mays' connection to the Negro Leagues, because it became a celebration of life for Willie Mays throughout the broadcast. That's where I felt like it missed, despite the fact that it was clear that Joe Davis had done a ton of research from the work that he put in. And talking to Joe yesterday morning, I knew what he was doing to try and learn, to fill in blanks in his knowledge. And I thought he did a great job leading those conversations. But I think there were some missed opportunities there where it could have taken another step forward. But overall, I thought they did a really nice job, especially with the presentation. And the 1954 thing was kind of cool. It's a little gimmicky, but kind of a cool gimmick to remind people what baseball on television used to look like, seeing as it is so prevalent now. I mean, like, heck, even when you and I were kids, you know, we didn't see every single game, so most of them at that point. So I think that was a really cool little element inside it.
Yeah, that's I really did like that half inning they did the broadcast that way. To me, it was it, and just with the audio and the way it went down, I think mm-hmm. it's good to remind people, especially younger fans, hey, this is what it was like. And I was hoping that people who watched, regardless of age, if you were 15 years old or if you were 70 years old, and maybe you don't want to hear about the racism in baseball anymore, you're sick of hearing about it or whatever, my hope is that people actually learned from it and listened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge part of the story. I mean, I don't think you can tell the story of the Negro Leagues without talking about that. And I think, you know, some of what you heard, you know, Bill Gruson before the game, even talking about that, you know, the 99-year-old former teammate of Mays with the Birmingham Black Barons, about how they understood that segregation was a reality and that they were attempting to make the best of it in the situation. But I think you're right. I mean, I think it's, you know, like, I get that people don't like to have, you know, this be beaten over the head by history, but at the same time, it's fairly important when you're talking about integration in baseball and you're going to a place that is was politically charged in the 50s and 60s, and you know, was a huge part of the civil rights movement. It was really on the battle lines of it. So, if you're going to do a historical game, you can't ignore history, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that there is something to be said for educating yourself about it. It doesn't mean that you have to, you know, you have to have every moment of the game be that, and certainly every game wasn't. But I think more from a historical perspective of the Negro Leagues, I would have liked to have had more content in that regard. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a
sure.
It's a the number of players that played in the Negro Leagues who were outstanding players and who are a huge part of baseball history, I think it's important to learn about. And you had last night access to some of baseball's greatest historians who specialize in that league. And I think that was, for a baseball fan, you know, getting more information on Oscar Charles would have been great, or Martin DeHigo, or, you know, some of these legends who played in the black baseball leagues that are important figures because they had mythical qualities the same way that the players that we have probably spent more time through Major League Baseball learning about, even though we didn't get to see them play either.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if we had an opportunity to talk about this. I don't think so. But just real quick before we move on to some Cubs here, the integration of the Negro League statistics into Major yeah. League Baseball stats, that move from a couple of months ago, I'm on board with it. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize the quality of those leagues in the same way that, you know, listen, I think they existed because of segregation, right? And it was the only opportunity for a good chunk of time for black baseball players to play professionally. And I don't think the quality of players have historically been in doubt, especially when you consider the number of black players who came into Major League Baseball and were instantly impactful, right? So I think it's important to include them in the same way that historically it's important to include the old American Association of the Federal League, which had been included for a lot longer, right? Which were leagues that were built to try and compete with the American and National Leagues. So I think it's important, but I think it's also important to you know, point out that the reason why that league existed, right? I don't think you can lose sight of that. I think it's important to recognize its place in history, to recognize that it was a major league, but not part of the major league and the major leagues and the reasons why.
Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio is with us on 670 The Score. So we were talking just a little bit ago about Shota Imanaga, who today gave up 10 runs in a loss to the Mets. And for somebody who in his first few starts, that ERA was under one, and he, you know, looked really good and looked like maybe the pickup of the offseason, it's been more of a struggle for him over his last five. Two of those were pretty good. Three of them have not been so good. As you look at him and the way he's been lately, are we seeing a trend of things to come, or do you think it's a blip?
I mean, I think the truth in who he is probably somewhere in the middle, right? I mean, I think there was a feeling that if you really liked Imanaga, you saw a number three starter, and if you weren't quite as sold, you saw a number four. And I think that's where statistically he's probably going to end up being. I mean, so much of what he does is dependent on how his fastball plays, right? When his fastball is in the upper third of the strike zone, it is largely unhittable. When he misses down, it's a big problem, right? And that's really his best pitch. And so I think more of what, you know, I was listening actually to Zach and Ron for the most part on the radio this afternoon, as opposed to watching closely while Imanaga was pitching. But my guess is that was the case, right? Is that there were more pitches that were out over the middle of the plate that weren't in the spots that he wanted to execute. And that's going to happen, especially on a day where the wind shifted and it was blowing out. And now, we know that happens at Wrigley, you know, frequently, right, over the course of the summer months if you get the prevailing winds coming in from out of the south. And so, you know, I think some of it is a nature of, hey, it was a windy day. Some of it was a bad start. But I think it was just like it was a mistake to assume that Javier Assad was going to be an ace. I think it was probably the case with Imanaga, too. I mean, the league is going to make adjustments to you. Now you have to adjust. You have to remember, it's his first year in Major League Baseball, and there certainly have been a lot of developments, and I think he's going to be a pretty solid Major League pitcher. I mean, I remember seeing him in the WBC and liking him. I think he's going to be a solid starter, but I think to think that he was going to be the most dominant starter in the National League was probably a little bit of fool's gold to begin with.
Mike, as you look at the National League Central here, it belongs to the Brewers. It has pretty much the entire season so far. They're 6.5 games in front of the second place Cardinals. The Cubs are 8.5 out. So you've got all these teams that are all pretty close to each other in the division. But then if you look at the wild card, as it stands right now, and I know it's still kind of early to be looking at it, the Cubs are only 1.5 games back of that. A lot of teams, pretty much every team in the National League, except for two, is a playoff contender legitimately right now. If you're the Cubs, how would you operate getting closer to the trade deadline? How do you think they will operate?
I don't think anybody has a good, clear idea of how to operate right now in the National League race. I think from a run scored, runs allowed standpoint, Cincinnati, who's a little bit further back, is probably in better shape. Like, if you use that as run differential as a more predictive quality of what's to come, I mean, Cincinnati has to feel really good about their chances, probably more so than some of the other teams that are in the mix. I just think that it's one of those years, and this is going to be the case fairly frequently with 40% of the league making the postseason, where trying to make a decision on what a team is going to do on June 21st or 22nd doesn't make much sense. I heard Ken Rosenthal drop on his Foul Territory podcast the other day, wake me up on July 20th and then I'll tell you who's buyers and sellers. And I think he's right. I think the next month is as much about jockeying position. I mean, we know what the needs are, right? Like, the Cubs probably need to find somebody who could, in an ideal world, you find somebody who can play third base, right? Who can play it defensively and provide some offensive production and really need help in the bullpen. And those aren't necessarily, at least the bullpen isn't necessarily hard to acquire. I think it's just a matter of whether or not you play well enough that you're willing to invest prospect capital in those moves down the stretch. And if you're going to be in the same spot, let's say the Cubs play 500 ball for the next month, and they're in a similar position where they're a couple games under and they're 1.5 games out, and they're being outscored on the season, I'm not sure that it makes a whole lot of sense to dive into the trade market for much other than pieces that can help around the fringes of the roster. Now, if you improve from here, I think that there's certainly a case to be made to trade. And I think by the same token, if you fall back, then you have to start considering moving pending free agents and potential deals. So I think that's, they're stuck in the middle like everybody else in the National League. And I just think it's way too early to try and make a decision on it. I mean, it's difficult for the teams because they have to try and follow both avenues. It's not the first time teams have had to do that, though. And I don't really have a whole lot of empathy for them because if they just improved their roster for this winter, they might not be in this position. And that's not just the Cubs. That's a lot of teams that are in that mix. I think in both leagues, you look at it, nobody makes me angrier than Detroit, who has this tremendous pitching staff, who basically punted the chance to get to improve the one thing they desperately needed to improve, which is their offense. So I just think that there's an awful lot of mediocre right now. I don't know that there is cream to rise to the top, but I think it's still another month before you really get a feel for who could be buying and who could be selling.
What did you think of Kyle Hendricks, who yesterday, he pitched deep into the sixth inning. It was his best start by far of the season. It felt almost vintage Hendricks, and he got the standing ovation. Because otherwise it hasn't been great for him this year. And I think there's this hope that maybe they can get more of that from him as the season goes on. What did you make of the start and what the rest of the year might bring for him?
Well, he was pretty good out of the bullpen against St. Louis last week, too. And I know he's owned the Cardinals in his career, but I think it's, I think it's an encouraging sign, right? I mean, he is a guy who's had a bunch of injuries the last couple of years, but he has certainly been a pretty dependable major league starter. I think he's really unique in that he is throwing well below hitting speed now compared to everybody else. I mean, he was never overpowering, but he's always been a command control guy. And I think it's worth continuing to monitor, is he getting swing and miss that's similar to what he's gotten at other times? Not that he's ever a big swing and miss guy. Is he getting weak contact
similar to what he's done during the course of his career. I mean, I think those are the things to monitor with him. And you know, is he walking guys? And, which is, you know, he's always been a really good command pitcher. So, like, those little things I think are important. But I think you keep running him out there until he proves that he can't do it consistently. And the fact that he got a second crack at it, he wouldn't be the first guy to go to the bullpen, get it figured out, and then turn their season around.
Farron, my guy, enjoy the rest of your Friday night, and thanks for hanging out with me.
Ranji, is it Ranji E? Do I have to add an extra Ron?
I think it's Ron. No, it's Ronger. That would be the Ronger hockey nickname.
Ronger, I'm just glad we didn't talk White Sox.
Well, guess what? They just lost, and you know how they lost? Well, they lost 2-1. They had the tying run on first base, and with one out, Paul DeJong, who's at first, they hit a fly ball to center field, and he just kept running, and they doubled him off, and that's how the White Sox lost. And he was not, I think he thought there were two outs. He was jogging to second, jogged past second base, center fielder caught the ball, and just lobbed it back into the infield. They stepped on first, and that's how it came to an end. Perfect White Sox.
Let me know what day. Let's get the pool going and let me know what day you have when Garfine breaks down in tears up
here. They are so garbage. Hey, I love you, buddy. Thank you.
Love you, pal. Take care.
Mike Farron, MLB Network Radio with us, and I am not lying to you. The White Sox just lost to the Tigers seconds ago, and that is exactly how they lost. Fly ball to center field with one out. Paul DeJong just kept running, and they doubled him off. He thought there were two outs. So perfect White Sox in 2024. Chris Ranji on the score. I fought the law, and the law won.
I fought the law, and we're back with host Chris Ranji on the score.
Tomorrow, the Cubs continue their series against the Mets from Wrigley Field. Pregame at 12:45. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call. First pitch, 1:20. Every Cubs game, listen in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. AUDACY. Yep, I'm Chris Ranji hanging out with you. And you think I was joking about the White Sox moments ago, minutes ago, losing with the tying run at first base. Paul DeJong, who took off thinking there were two outs, and a standard fly ball to center field caught. Center fielder doubled him off easily. That's how it came to an end. Good stuff, man. That is so perfect for the 2024 White Sox, isn't it? All the time that I spent doing White Sox coverage, we had some blech years. I cannot tell you how glad I am that I'm not doing it during this one. Holy crap. This team, man. Woof! Here's what I'm going to allow you to do. I'm going to let you stew on the White Sox loss tonight. And after we talk to Chuck Swirsky next, which we're going to do when we hit the break here and then come back, after the Bulls made the trade of Alex Caruso yesterday. You know what? If you want to fire him off, if you want to unload on the White Sox, I'll set aside some time next hour for you to do it. What do you say? 312-644-6767. We could pretend like it's 2014 all over again. Chris Ranji on the score.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, no! We suck again!
Score fans, have an HD radio in your car? If so, you can listen to the score in crystal clear FM quality. Just go to 104.3 HD2 on your FM dial and hear your favorite score personalities in FM quality sound, as well as great play-by-play action, like your Chicago Cubs.
Deep right center, back toward the wall, that ball is gone!
104.3 HD2 on your FM dial to listen to the score in HD.
Get rid of nagging joint pain without drugs or surgery. Now there is a better way. All natural treatments. Call QC Kinetics 312-809-5955.
The light is fading, your hands are sore, and the last tool has been put away. Now is the time to feel the satisfaction that comes with a job well done. But when you get your tools from Harbor Freight, something about the job feels a little different. Your wallet because we believe that everyone deserves hardworking tools at hardworking prices, and that's what we have here. So, whatever you do, do it for less at Harbor Freight.
This is Pre-Tection. Yep, Pre-Tection. The everyday skin protection ritual that protects your skin from mosquitoes. Pre-barbecue. Pre-playground. Pre-everything. Pre-everyday. Prevention is the best protection. This summer, make sure you have Off, the number one dermatologist-recommended repellent brand. SC Johnson, a family company.
Looking for a job that'll feel more like a career you'll fall in love with? Join Odyssey. From the programming and on-air side if you're a music, sports, or news lover, to the business and sales side that makes everything tick, we need you on our team. Odyssey even offers an annual fellowship program where you can learn to hone your skills from true masters of their craft. Odyssey is more than a job. It's a career you'll fall in love with. Visit odyssey.com/careers, and maybe we'll see you around the office. That's odyssey.com/careers.
Get everything you need for your home renovation project and save big money now at Menards. From dust protection to heavy-duty construction projects, Polar Plastics has a fitting solution. Polyplastic sheeting is strong and durable and comes in a variety of sizes and thicknesses to meet the requirements of your project. Shop Menards' selection of Polar Plastic products in-store or online at Menards.com for more great deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
So to work at our big important bank, first, a little test.
Okay.
The phone rings and you...
Answer it.
No, you let it ring. Oh, 15, 20 times.
Why?
We're a big, important bank. We're busy.
Aren't they busy?
Who cares? When you do answer, you say...
How can I help you?
No. Here's our company directory. You pass them off to someone in the A's, they pass them on to a B name, and down the line to the Z's. We call it ring roulette.
You know, you're not at all like First American Bank.
Heavens no.
First American Bank has incredible customer service, the best loan deals in town, cash management service. Why would anyone bank here when they could bank with First American Bank, a bank that respects them and treats them like family?
Hello? Oh, I gotta wrap this up. It's First American Bank following up on my home equity loan.
What?
They are the bank that does more for your money. Yes!
First American Bank, the bank that does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Tomorrow, the Cubs continue their series against the Mets from Wrigley Field. Pre-game at 12:45. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call. First pitch, 1:20. Every Cubs game, listen in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app, AUDACY. Yep, I'm Chris Ranji hanging out with you. And you think I was joking about the White Sox moments ago, minutes ago, losing with the tying run at first base? Paul DeJong, who took off thinking there were two outs, and a standard fly ball to center field caught. Center fielder doubled him off easily. That's how it came to an end. Good stuff, man. That is so perfect for the 2024 White Sox, isn't it? All the time that I spent doing White Sox coverage, we had some blech years. I cannot tell you how glad I am that I'm not doing it during this one. Holy crap. This team, man. Woof. Here's what I'm going to allow you to do. I'm going to let you stew on the White Sox loss tonight. And after we talk to Chuck Swirsky next, which we're going to do when we hit the break here and then come back, after the Bulls made the trade of Alex Caruso yesterday. You know what? If you want to fire them off, if you want to unload on the White Sox, I'll set aside some time next hour for you to do it. What do you say? 312-644-6767. We could pretend like it's 2014 all over again. Chris Ranji on the score.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, no! We suck again!
Score fans, have an HD radio in your car? If so, you can listen to the score in crystal clear FM quality. Just go to 104.3 HD2 on your FM dial and hear your favorite score personalities in FM quality sound, as well as great play-by-play action like your Chicago Cubs.
Deep right center, back toward the wall, that ball is gone!
Go to 104.3 HD2 on your FM dial to listen to the score in HD.
Get rid of nagging joint pain without drugs or surgery. Now there is a better way. All natural treatments. Call QC Kinetics 312-809-5955.
The light is fading, your hands are sore, and the last tool has been put away. Now is the time to feel the satisfaction that comes with a job well done. But when you get your tools from Harbor Freight, something about the job feels a little different. Your wallet. Because we believe that everyone deserves hardworking tools at hardworking prices. And that's what we have here. So, whatever you do, do it for less at Harbor Freight.
This is Pre-Tection. Yep, Pre-Tection. The everyday skin protection ritual that protects your skin from mosquitoes. Pre-barbecue. Pre-playground. Pre-everything. Pre-everyday. Prevention is the best protection. This summer, make sure you have Off, the number one dermatologist-recommended repellent brand. SC Johnson, a family company.
Looking for a job that'll feel more like a career you'll fall in love with? Join Odyssey. From the programming and on-air side if you're a music, sports, or news lover, to the business and sales side that makes everything tick, we need you on our team. Odyssey even offers an annual fellowship program where you can learn to hone your skills from true masters of their craft. Odyssey is more than a job. It's a career you'll fall in love with. Visit odyssey.com/careers, and maybe we'll see you around the office. That's odyssey.com/careers.
Get everything you need for your home renovation project and save big money now at Menards. From dust protection to heavy-duty construction projects, Polar Plastics has a fitting solution. Polyplastic sheeting is strong and durable and comes in a variety of sizes and thicknesses to meet the requirements of your project. Shop Menards' selection of Polar Plastic products in-store or online at Menards.com for more great deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
So to work at our big important bank, first, a little test.
Okay.
The phone rings and you...
Answer it.
No, you let it ring. Oh, 15, 20 times.
Why?
We're a big, important bank. We're busy.
Aren't they busy?
Who cares? When you do answer, you say...
How can I help you?
No. Here's our company directory. You pass them off to someone in the A's, they pass them on to a B name and down the line to the Z's. We call it ring roulette.
You know, you're not at all like First American Bank.
Heavens no.
First American Bank has incredible customer service, the best loan deals in town, cash management service. Why would anyone bank here when they could bank with First American Bank, a bank that respects them and treats them like family?
Hello? Oh, I gotta wrap this up. It's First American Bank following up on my home equity loan.
What?
They are the bank that does more for your money. Yes!
First American Bank, the bank that does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.